The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program may contain detailed testimonials of domestic violence, childhood sexual abuse, rape, and/or psychological abuse. If you experience a trigger while listening to this broadcast, please visit the links on our host page for helpful resources. If you or somebody you know has experienced domestic violence or psychological or sexual abuse, the next hour could be the most important one this week. This is Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice with your hosts, Reese Zigazaga and Denise Watkus. Our program features survivors that share their stories of abuse and the healing journey. Join us as we work toward ending the silence on which abuse thrives. Now, here are your hosts.
I heard the door close. We will be back. Be a good girl. Parents' kiss still warm on my cheek. I sit in my seat. Maybe this time I will be invisible. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a... Come sit on my knee. I bought you something pretty.
Hello and welcome to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. I'm your host, Reese Zigazaga.
And I'm your co-host, Denise. The clip you just heard was from a poem called Hush by the poet Blue Nile. We'll play the full poem for you at the end of the show. If at any time during our broadcast you'd like to contact us, reach out to us at radio@abusesurvivalstories.com or on Twitter at Survival of Abuse.
Today on the show, we are joined by the wonderful Deb Mabry. Before she was 11, Deb had been sexually violated by 4 different people. Her mission is to break the stigma and taboo that surrounds sexual abuse and encourage healthy dialogue focused on healing. She is a Harmony Integration Coach, facilitator for individuals and groups recovering from sexual abuse, and best-selling author of Unlock the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse, Ready, Aim, Inspire, and What is Your Teenage Daughter Afraid of? Deb, a very warm welcome to you. We're so pleased to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be sharing some time speaking with you about a very sensitive topic, but one that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
Welcome, Deb. So, Deb, can you talk to us about what you experienced as a child?
Well, we lived up in a northern community in Ontario, and my parents separated when I was 6 years old, and we moved to Kingston, where I grew up. And during the next 3 to 4 years, I unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on which way you look at it at this point in time for me, I was violated by 4 people, and 3 of which were teenagers, and 1 of which was a 42-year-old man. And in my book, that's sort of a piece of the story that I share there. So, yeah, it was a big change when we moved. My mother then went back to school and became a nurse, and myself and my older brother were in the care of other individuals, and, you know, sort of moved around a little bit, and these people came into our lives, and I never said anything, I never told, I just tried to, my best to avoid the people.
Wow. And was there any one particular incident that stands out most to you?
Well, certainly. I mean, that's what I write in Unlock the Door, the chapter that I wrote. I think it's only about 3 pages long, and it highlights where I had decided, and I hadn't, you know, turned 11 years old yet, I had decided that was it. I was not going to be touched by this man ever again. And And he had tricked me into getting into his vehicle one day, and all of a sudden there we were heading towards his place, and I was, you know, very upset at myself for getting in the car. But I decided it wasn't going to happen. I wasn't getting out of the car. So he pulled into the driveway of his apartment, and he got out of the car, and it just expected I would follow him, and I didn't, and he waved me to follow him, and I shook my head no, and he started back towards the car to get me, and I slid across the seat, and I slammed down the lock of the car, and then he again encouraged me to get out of the car, and this was in 1973, and in those days, I mean, he didn't take the keys out of the car, so there wasn't any way for him to get in the car. So he started towards his apartment, and all of a sudden went running around the front of the car to get to the driver's side. And, of course, I just slid across and smashed down the lock. And so, I mean, that day certainly stands out of my mind, because then he went back into his apartment, and he came back out to the car after what seemed a while. So I sat there, you know, in my little brain contemplating what my options were, which were, you know, try to run and go home, but I didn't know the way. Getting out of the car and asking for help, but then I would have to identify what was going on, and I couldn't do that. And so when he came back to the car, he apologized. He said he was never going to, you know, touch me again, hurt me again. And, you know, I thought about that, and he hadn't actually ever lied to me, and he hadn't, like, physically, like, harmed me, like, violence. He had never been that way with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I trusted. And he did take me home. So, I mean, that was the end of that. And like I say in the book, I mean, I just wished him dead. I wished him dead. I wished him dead. And short time later, I mean, he had a massive heart attack. And so that was it. It was over. And I really had the mindset after that to not get myself in any situations. And I basically didn't trust anybody in terms of physical contact like that. I just avoided any situation where I was going to be alone with somebody.
Do you remember what got you to that, like what the sort of the mental process was that got you to that point of saying, no, I'm done, this isn't happening to me anymore?
Well, I think I had a very mature mind. I mean, a lot of people say that, but I had already encountered an awful lot in my life at that point. And I just decided that was it. I was pretty headstrong. Even, you know me now. I mean, I'm pretty determined. If I say I'm going to do something, I pretty much do it, or I make it happen some way or the other if I believe in it. And and I knew that what those people had done to me was wrong. And, you know, I didn't feel responsible in any way for what they had done. But I felt like, you know what, I needed to take control, and I was going to stop it. And I didn't feel like I could tell anybody. I didn't have a close relationship, really, with anybody to share that. Like, neither one of my parents or my grandmother. We just didn't talk. We didn't talk about those things. We didn't talk about anything. So I just decided on my own. That was it. And I was mad at myself, you know, upset for getting in the car that day and that I shouldn't have trusted him. And, you know, I just made the decision. That was, you know, it was enough. It was dirty and icky, and like, what was he doing? Like, he was sick, you know, like his mind was sick and his body was sick. And, you know, I just decided that was it. That was enough.
That's amazing. And it happened at the hands of four different people. How did that make you see the world around you? What sort of effect did it have on your perception?
Well, it's an interesting thing, because I really feel that I was brought in this human body to have this journey. And I believe I, you know, me as a soul, as an energy, decided the lessons I needed to have. And that doesn't mean I selected sexual abuse, but it means I selected the lessons that ultimately I would have to endure. And at a very young age, I accepted things. I mean, I knew I was adopted. I accepted that. My parents fought. There was nothing I could control. I did a speech a few weeks ago. I said, you know, at a very young age, I realized a few things. And one was that I could control certain things and that I could not control other things. And when I couldn't control it, I had to make the best do with what I had at that time, which meant, and you know, that day, locking the door. In the other situation with the teenagers, it meant avoiding the situation, not going where they were, telling my mom I didn't want that person babysitting me anymore, or if he showed up, I wasn't going to be staying at home. So I just had this, you know, that I accepted things, but I knew I could control certain things.
It's incredible that you had that awareness at such a young age. It, you know, for a lot of people, it sort of has the opposite effect. To be sexually violated as a child, it makes them withdrawn, it makes them quiet and small, and it seems that it was sort of the opposite with you.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I had both sides. I became very shy. I didn't share information. I became very secretive in that sense. I didn't share a lot of, you know, we just didn't, who knows what it's related to. Partly the abuse, partly everything else that was going on with the separation of my parents. Who knows? I was secretive. I wouldn't say what I felt. I wasn't asked, so I didn't say. My mother didn't share her feelings. My father didn't share her feelings. My brother didn't share his feelings. I mean, nobody shared their feelings, so I became quiet and didn't share feelings. But I was very curious, you know, I was very artistic, and I loved to write and draw and sports. I kept busy, and, you know, people that have been violated have several different type of addictions or things that they fill their mind with, keep their mind busy so they're not thinking about the abuse. And I had a lot of creativity, and, you know, I was given that and blessed with that, and I took advantage of it. I stayed busy and probably too much, and I probably still continue to do that, where I have too many things on the go. But I certainly, it took a long time, but I've come to a place where I'm very transparent in terms of feelings and emotions where appropriate.
Well, so you told us a story about the one particular incident and how that ended. How did the other abuses, how did they come to an end? Or when did they come to an end?
Well, like I said, I mean, I avoided those individuals. One was a scenario where we were living somewhere, and we just ended up moving. You know, my mother, I can't remember when she started school, finished school, got a job, or got another job, but we ended up moving to another location, and then that individual was just not in the picture anymore. And then in another situation, it was a babysitter, and I was right after that, I said to my mom, you know, I don't want her coming anymore. And if she comes, I'm not going to be here. So my mother knew there's something going on. I was pretty determined not to have her there. And then in the other situation, it was a place where my brother and I went, and I just stopped going.
Wow.
So it's a unique situation. I think a lot of people that are violated as children, they don't have a choice. They don't have an opportunity to avoid, you know, the uncle that's always there or the aunt that's always there. And that wasn't the case with me. There wasn't anybody in my immediate family that, you know, ever violated me at all. And so I didn't have that situation, you know. It wasn't like we went somewhere even where, you know, somebody was going to be bribing me to go down the basement. It wasn't like that. So I was able, fortunately, to be wise enough to avoid those people.
So I know you said that you didn't really have a lot of communication with, like, your mother and your father, but somehow you were able to say things to them and they sensed it. Do you think that they knew, like, in hindsight, do you think maybe they knew, just didn't want to discuss it because it was uncomfortable?
Well, I know my father had no idea because when we left, I was 6 years old, and I didn't even see him for 4 years after that, just briefly one time. And he would have never had any idea that anything was going on. And my mother, there was one situation where my grandmother had come in and... Well, what it was that there was this teenager, and he was messing with me, so I had my panties down. And he heard her coming, so he took off. So I'm sitting there on the dining room floor in this position, and she comes around the corner, and I just looked up at her, and she looked at me, and she didn't say anything. She didn't say anything at all. She just kept on walking. And for years, I sort of harbored that, like, why didn't she say something, or why didn't she know something was wrong, or why didn't she help me? I had those little child thoughts, and I actually just had an epiphany. It was just a matter of months ago, and I realized that we moved right after that. So I do wonder if my grandmother said something to my mother, not necessarily what she saw, but just, you know, their way in that generation would have been, you know, listen, I think maybe you should move on. You know, you've been here long enough, kind of thing. You know, that would be the dialogue I would think that would have come into play if my grandmother said anything. So now my mind has shifted. I kind of think in a way that maybe my grandmother, you know, knew something, couldn't say anything, didn't want to say anything. You know, don't give it attention, so then little Debbie, you know, won't think there's anything going on. But get me out of there, kind of thing. So,
So you talk a lot about your thought process. What kind of feelings were you having during this time?
Well, in that situation, you know what? I don't really recall. It was so long ago. For that situation, that was the first time. That was barely 6 years old, and I wasn't being physically hurt. I was confused. Right. I thought, what is this? But even at that time, I didn't have the bad, this is bad, bad, awful. This is kind of playing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to identify. I knew that it couldn't be quite right because it was a secret. But I didn't have any idea of what was right or wrong. I didn't even know what sexuality was, for crying out loud. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow. So we're going to head into a break now, Deb. And when we come back, we'll be talking to you about your healing journey. In the meantime, to our listeners, I just wanted to let everyone know that we'll be holding the next Abuse Survival Stories event, which is the 18th Abuse Survival Stories event, on June 20th in Toronto. We just posted the info on our Facebook page. You can check it out at facebook.com/abusesurvivalstories. We'll see you in 3 minutes.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Abuse is an epidemic that thrives on silence. It's time to reclaim our voices. Abuse Survival Stories is an event series which celebrates men and women who have experienced various forms of abuse while providing them with a platform to share their stories and help shatter the silence on which abuse thrives. Featuring raw survival testimonials, powerful spoken word poetry, and creative expression exercises, Abuse Survival Stories is a positive experience which uplifts both the mind and the soul. If you are interested in bringing an Abuse Survival Stories event to your city, please contact us at radio@abusesurvivalstories.com and let's put an end to suffering in silence.
How do you define work? Is it that mundane Monday through Friday place that seems to be sucking a third of your life out of you? Or have you made it a place of personal fulfillment, achievement, and purpose? If you are looking to make your work life the latter, tune in to Working on Purpose with Elise Cortez. There are all kinds of inspiring work-life stories told by people who have made work something to look forward to every day. Working on Purpose can be heard every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Empowerment.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
You are listening to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. To reach our show today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. We're here with Deb Mabry, author, harmony integrative coach, and public speaker. Deb, let's talk about your healing journey. What would you say that healing is?
Well, it's different things for different people, first off. So I can't just say it's the same route for everybody. What I believe the first thing is that you acknowledge or accept on some level what actually happened, meaning just the story, because a lot of us spend a lot of time avoiding even thinking about the violations that happened. Some people completely block it out. Some people suppress it very deep within, you know, consciously and subconsciously. So I believe that it's very, very important to accept it and acknowledge it. And I think that's what I believe so much in radio shows like this, and getting rid of the stigma and the taboo so people can come to a place of healing beyond the shame, the stigma, and the taboo. I mean, we have to be talking about this. So the first time people reveal even little tidbits of what has happened, whether that's to a friend, a therapist in the group, or something like that, it's incredibly important that you just are able to, even you don't even have to verbalize a lot. You can write that out in a journal. You can write that in a poem, a song. And just playing music is very expressive. You can paint that out. And just to get it somehow outside of your body and say, okay, this happened. Now what's next? So then after accepting that it happened, it's finding a real safe place to have a conversation. And that's somebody who will just sit. They're not trying to fix you. They're not going to judge you. They're just going to be supportive. And a lot of times people don't. They just don't know how to do that because we haven't been trained to do that. And I believe there are people that are very effective in that. And they're, to me, they're sexual violation coaches. They specialize in that. So they're there.
Oh, no, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so they're finding somebody who is very supportive. I believe that you need to go about it as that you're going on another journey, and the intent is to feel better. It's to understand. So you need to sort of fill your surrounding with people that understand and who are not going to judge your coping strategies of any kind of addictions or overworking or anything like that. They're just going to listen to you. And then I really believe, after all the facilitating that I've done in groups, that a place like the Gatehouse is just phenomenal, because he goes through a whole series of talking about things that people never talk about, the shame, the anger, relationships, guilt, forgiveness, and it's done in a very systematic way, and yet it's sort of free-falling. And the healing comes, this is a huge point, healing comes from establishing safe connections with people that understand, which means other people that have been violated.
Wow.
And it's a close link. You don't necessarily have to be violated sexually to understand that, because there's a very close link with physical abuse. And emotional abuse to some degree or another, but certainly physical and sexual abuse. But the closer it is to your story, where you can sit there and go, somebody's talking, and you can go, oh my gosh, they've experienced the same thing. Oh my gosh, I get it. Oh my gosh, they understand. That is incredibly powerful. So the acceptance, the support, and the connecting, and then that's all part of it. That just goes up and down, ebb and flow like a wave, and people go through a lot during that period of time. And then I believe the next piece to that is to be of service, is to do what you guys are doing, what I'm doing, where we're comfortable enough where we can talk about this openly, and where we can facilitate growth and healing with other people. And when you are taking action, you know, and writing a book, doing a radio show, anything like that, then you grow. When you teach, you grow. When you listen, you grow.
Yes.
Definitely. I think it's phenomenal what you said about, even if you don't talk about it to someone, just getting it outside of your body, that's really huge. Because for years, I never believed that I needed to heal, or I thought I was healed and I was keeping everything inside. And I think there are a lot of people that are like that. When did your actual healing journey begin?
Well, I think I was on that course right from the very beginning. I never, ever said I need to heal from sexual abuse. I never did. I didn't. I knew I had a little bit of anger. I never even connected that to the sexual violations I experienced. I was I was dealing with, should I forgive him or them? Should I not forgive them? And then I said, yeah, I'll forgive them. And then I just threw it out to you. Yeah, okay, it's done. I forgive them. And then probably about 5 years after that, you know, I, every once in a while when I would come about, I'd be thinking about it. And I'd be like, no, if he's standing in front of me, I am kicking where the sun don't shine right up into his throat. So I knew I hadn't really forgiven anybody. And what I actually did was said to myself, I'm done with forgiveness. I'm in a place of, it happened, I can't change it. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the end of forgiveness. I always felt that the forgiveness was a, trying to forgive was a more of a weight than anything. And, you know, in my book, Sylvia Fraser, she has this great line, and she said that, you know, I experienced benign indifference. You know, her, she's in her 70s, and my father did. But I'm the same thing. If I don't think about it, I mean, I think about it because I'm an advocate now, but I just don't put a lot of energy into it. Wherever you put your energy, you know, your every cell in your body just resonates there. So I just don't think about it a lot anymore. I just really don't. I think about healing, and I just remember all the years in martial arts and, you know, and hitting bags and thinking, oh, I could be really angry, and I would not know why. And then I realized through the gatehouse, okay, well, that anger is probably related partially to that, partially to the other things. And then I get things like trance dances and sweat lodges and rebirthing and walking on coals and cycling across Canada. And, you know, I did a lot of things that they were all part of the healing journey. But I didn't go out and seek those things as healing. I didn't know they were connected to healing. And the same thing with the harmony integration training. And I see this all the time. People have done all kinds of work, and then they come to me, and I get rid of the charges around the trauma, and people are like, well, I think it's gone. And then we go into it, and then it's there. So we're able to discharge that. But, yeah, it's been a very interesting healing kind of journey without ever planning it, really.
Wow. And it's... Most people, you know, talk about the importance of forgiveness. So it's really interesting to hear your perspective on it, because I think a lot of people do struggle with it, and maybe it's really not for everybody. And that's, I'm really glad you brought that up. So you mentioned that looking at forgiveness and trying to forgive was very challenging. Would you say that was the most difficult part of the healing journey for you?
Well, see, when I was thinking that, that wasn't even like it was part of any healing journey. It was just, you know, you hear different people talk about forgiveness, and it was something that came into my mind, like, I guess I should, you know, and that was just one thing in my life, you know, I guess I should forgive those people. I guess I should forgive, you know, my mom for saying we're going on holidays and leaving my father. I guess I should forgive my father for having an affair. I guess I should forgive, you know, there were a list of things, but on this particular one, I just, you know, I thought I had forgiven, but then every time I thought of this person, I had anger, and you know, if he wasn't dead and he was in front of me, I probably would have hit him. But so I knew I didn't forgive. It was, see, forgiveness, the first, when I talk about forgiveness in groups or with people, let's define what forgiveness is first. And what I find is that everybody has a different idea, even about what forgiveness is, so we can't say to everybody, you should forgive. That's like shooting on somebody.
Yes.
And that just makes people feel more guilt and more shame. Let's put forgiveness over there, okay, and define it and talk about, you know, who do you have to forgive? Because typically people that have been violated, they need to forgive themselves first, because they carry so much shame and self-blame and low self-esteem, low self-worth. And then they've, you know, used drugs or had too much sex or not enough, and they have all these things that they've done, and then they you know, and then somebody says, you should forgive your perpetrator. Well, give me a break. I mean, the energy to me is on the person who's experienced this. Let's talk about yourself and healing yourself and those things that you used as coping strategies that kept you alive. These are good things, but now they're not serving you. So now address how we shift those behaviors, and that's where people have a lot of shame, is because they haven't shifted the behaviors that serve them. So we need to talk about that. And forgiveness will come about naturally. It's just like somebody, say, who ate themselves, you know, like crazy, or like kept eating and eating and eating and eating, gained, you know, 100 pounds to keep somebody away. And then somebody's telling them they got to go to Weight Watchers and all this stuff. Well, that's not going away until they take care of the core issue. And when we can get to the abuse and talk about the abuse and shift their perception about what happened and what how they behaved and what they can look forward to moving forward, when we shift that, the weight's going to fall off. So I think that same thing with forgiveness.
Can we just back up a little bit, Deb? I want you to reiterate something you said. I want to make sure I have it, or if you can clarify further. So you're saying that a lot of shame happens when we're sort of using outdated techniques that no longer serve us?
I totally believe that. There's the shame of the abuse, okay? And often that's not even the biggest part of the shame. Because then the person often becomes secretive. So then they don't even identify with themselves, or they disconnect from their body, for example. Maybe they, like there's the gal in the book, Tabitha, who then just ended up sleeping with everybody after she had been raped, right? And then she had so much shame from that. So she was coping, dealing with the abuse by then taking control, and now I'm going to sleep with whoever I want to. Mm-hmm. But then that built up more and more shame. And it's the same thing when people, you know, start using drugs or anything else. Then they get layers and layers, and then they have bad relationships. And because they're having a difficult time, they then connect with other people that are having difficult times. So then they have other types of abuse come into their life. So then there's this shame, why did I let this happen? You know, and there's just layers and layers and layers. But the person was coping the best they could at the time. If I'm going to jump off a bridge or shoot some stuff into my vein so I forget, even though somebody's going to say, you're an addict and you're shooting up and that's wrong and bad, that's kept that person alive. So at first it serves them, it saves their life. But later on, they have to somehow come to terms with that violation that happened, and start.
So, would you say then that shame could be a warning sign that we need to reexamine our thought processes and our coping mechanisms?
Oh, for sure. I mean, listen, we have shame whether or not we've been violated. We have shame when your teacher says, you know, slaps your hand, says you should be writing with your right hand and not your left hand. We have shame when our mother says, "Shame on you! Why didn't you?" You know, put your clothing away when you came home at night. And there's all kinds of shame that we have. You know, we're born this perfectly innocent little being that relies on other people. And then depending on the words that are spoken to us, everybody has shame on one thing or another, but it's the level of shame. But that's what, when we become aware of shame and the effect that it has on us emotionally, spiritually, and physically, then that awareness, we never go back once we have that awareness. So it's what we do to seek guidance from people that have been there and understand that. Did that answer your question?
Yes, that's so huge for me because it just really resonates with things that I'm experiencing in my personal life. So, and I've never heard it put that way in terms of shame. So I just really appreciate it. I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about it.
Totally fine. Yeah. Give me a coaching call. Maybe we can work on some shame.
And I have to say, you know, especially with the forgiving, I think that, you know, even myself, I'll give my definition of what I believe forgiving is and tell people, you know, it's for you, let go. But I think that you've probably, like, for listeners, you may have released the weight of a million years off of some of their shoulders because, you know, we've been told that until you forgive others, you're not going to go any further and you're not going to go any further in your healing. And, You know, that's really huge, and it makes so much sense. I've never heard a lot of what you're saying. I've never heard things put that way. It's very refreshing, so thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a huge way for a lot. And the other thing is listen, there's other things to forgive, too. So, for example, like in my book, there are a few people that actually did tell. So this was happening. Maybe they didn't tell right away. Maybe it was a couple of years, but they did eventually tell. And when they told, like there's one gal, so I can't remember what age she was, but she was maybe 12, 13 years old. There's actually two of them in the book that just jumped in my mind. Both of them, their mom ended up knowing. And on one case, the mother put a lock on her door. It was her stepfather that had been, you know, raping her every day for days and days and days. The mother caught them in the act, went into the kitchen, and then the next day they put a lock on the girl's door. She was left in that room for 2 years, like going to school. When she came home, it was her responsibility to lock her stepfather out. The other one was the boyfriend, the mom's boyfriend, raped her. She went right away, told her mom, and her mom said, "He must have thought that you were me." Okay, so talk about a huge, should I forgive? How can I forgive? But not the perpetrators, their moms, because that impact was more devastating, more damaging than the initial sexual act. Because if those mothers had stepped in, listened to the conversation, not freaked out, because that's not good either, not anger, that causes shame on the child. They just sat back, they listened to that, breathed through it, rewarded their child. "Thank you so much. You are such a mature child. Or, you know, like, I have so much respect for you for sharing. And mommy needs to think about this. And I want you to know that I'm safe and you won't be near that person again."
Yes.
Think about how that mindset of that child is rewarded and how how much confidence that child's going to have. But so for the forgiveness in those cases, that's also the perpetrator. That's also, you know, then you find out later on that somebody else in the family was violated and they never said anything. If they'd said something, then you would have been okay. So there's so many layers of forgiveness. And for me, it's such a huge weight. If we do the healing work, all this other stuff, I really believe that it starts to shed itself, that you come to a place where you don't really need to forgive, but that means you are forgiving.
Definitely.
Wow.
Well, Deb, you did mention the gatehouse when you were speaking, and right now we're going to head into a break, but when we come back, we do want to speak to you more about the gatehouse and what you're doing in that initiative. And to everybody out there listening, we're going to see you on the other side of 3 minutes.
Follow us on Twitter for more great ideas at Voice America Empowerment.
When is the last time you saw sparkles of life in your day? Each day holds a treasure, the extra in the ordinary. It is too easy to miss them because they're familiar and we take them for granted. If you want to add sparkle to your day, listen to Mighty Gems, spotlighting everyday jewels with Dee Lee. She offers a new way to view the world and to discover your own mighty gems in daily life. Listen Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
If you're a free thinker, a seeker of truth, and a lover of stimulating literature, then you will find all that you need in just one powerful book, The God Behind the God, the second book by critically acclaimed author Arian Herbert. Many are saying that this new book is absolutely outstanding, thought-provoking, even mind-blowing. Get your copy of The God Behind the God now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Chapters Indigo, or visit thegodbehindthegod.com. Seek within until you discover
The God Behind the God.
Friend us on Facebook to keep up with what's empowering the world. Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. To reach our show today, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. Again, that's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back. We were just talking with Deb about her healing journey. And before we left the break, I did say I wanted to speak to you a little bit about the Gatehouse and what you do there.
Well, when I decided to write Unlock the Door, a friend of mine suggested I go to the Gatehouse and interview the founder, whose name is Arthur Lockhart. And the Gatehouse has been open, it's going to be 17 years in another month. And it's on the lakeshore here in Toronto. Sits right up front of Humber College. And it's a place where people go who have been sexually violated, and it's mostly adults, though the police use it for when, you know, there's an allegation and they bring children in there. And it's literally like a house. I mean, it doesn't have any, you know, bedrooms upstairs. We have meeting rooms. And so we meet in groups, and there's some one-on-one counseling available. And it's all supported by donations. There's no government funding or anything like that. It's all privately supported, and it's an amazing place to go, and, you know, it takes a lot of courage to come up those stairs. But when I went there, Arthur had said, I did an interview for my book, and Arthur had said, you know, Deb, if you're going to be on this journey and interviewing all these people, because Unlock the Door is a compilation book, so he said, maybe you should explore what happened to you. And I said, well, I don't really think I need to. I don't, you know, but I thought about it. And then I did a couple of interviews, and I thought, you know what, he knows more than I do. And I believe that, you know, we have two ears and one mouth, and he knew more, and I needed to listen to him. So I signed up right away. I was fortunate, got into a program, and wow, I just learned so much. And I learned so much from the other women that were in the room. Phase one, you're in the same gender. The phase two, the men and the women come together. Both of them are a 16-week program, one night a week for 2 hours. The men's night is the Wednesday night, the women's night is a Tuesday night, and the phase two can either fall on a Monday night or a Thursday night. And then we also have a couple sessions that we do, which they're starting to run them. We've been doing them on some Saturdays, so every few months on a Saturday.
Beautiful. And you're also very adamant and open about sharing your story. Why do you believe that it's important for people to reveal their sexual abuse?
Well, if it's you know, on your mind and you just can't shake it, you have nightmares, you have anxiety, you can't explain, you have depression, you can't explain, eating disorders, relationship after relationship disintegrates. If you have all or some of these kinds of things, you need to address it. And often people suppress it so much, and then it manifests itself in physical entities. For example, I had this massive fibroid for a number of years of trying to contain it, and when I started Unlock the Door, it just kind of disappeared, you know. And I'd been treating it with a couple things, and then I went back to see my doctor one time. She's like, where did your fibroid go?
Wow.
And I laughed, and I thought, you know, listen, it makes sense, and this is really true. There are a few books. I mean, Louise Hay is somebody that talks all about every psychological difficulty that you've ever had is manifested in your body. So if you have weak knees or ankles or hips or something, it's all aligned with something that happens. So if you're really sad all the time, you're going to have, you know, this kind of thing. If you say, I have a heartache, then you probably really do have a heartache.
Mm.
And so, I mean, it's just so important to talk about these things. And my goodness, it's just, you know, we didn't used to be able to talk about interracial marriages. We didn't, you know, homosexuality.
Yes.
Like, black people, you're both black. I'm talking to you. I'm white. Like, is that okay? Like, please, give me a break. Like, why can't we talk about, or as long as we do it in a healing, proactive healing way, why can't we talk about anything? This right and wrong and good and bad, all this does is cause so many difficulties for people, so much stress.
Mm. Absolutely. So important. We're all about, you know, obviously reclaiming the voice. So you referred to your book, Unlocking the Door Beyond Sexual Abuse, a few times during this conversation, Deb. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Well, it's a compilation book. I ended up going on and on and on, and I interviewed 39 people, and once people found out about it, I had to eventually cut it off. It's divided into five sections. There's something called Family Secrets, which is all about, you know, everybody in the family, and then there's one of where it talks about then the next level, which would be, you know, the coach or the teacher or those kind of situations. Mm-hmm. And there's an advocacy section, a couple of people shared. There's a methodology section in there as well. So it deals, it's an interview back and forth, probably, I think, about 35, 34 interview back. So I was trying to get, not trying, I went in with the people saying, this is a book to help people heal. I want you to share your story, just basic, not a bunch of details, but basic, how you initially started to cope, and then how you learned how it manifested in your life, how it played out, what your life was like. Then what did you do as you started to move forward and started to heal? So there's a lot of insights, a lot of lessons. That's me. You know, even in the latest book that I'm doing, it's a completely different book. It's on entrepreneurs. It's all about the lessons and the insights that we have and that we share. We have the voice, or we are the voice, until other people can find their voice, then they can help other people. And this is the oneness. This is the movement, the conscious thinking. The world is shifting. We're all so close together. Yes. At the internet, connecting. We share this information all the time. So the book, I mean, and it's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon. It's also a Kindle book on Amazon as well, so it's affordable for everybody. And I actually just shared that, you know, I'm taking another whole program at the Transformational Arts College here in Toronto, and I just showed it to some teachers last night, and they were, you know, I want to get it into schools, and it's a real learning tool. You know, it's different than the other books.
Awesome. I mean, Deb, you wear so many hats. You're a facilitator, you're a harmony integration coach, you're an author. Why do you choose to do all of this advocacy work?
Well, somebody has to stand up, and somebody has to be a voice for other people. And I'm certainly not the only one. As you ladies know, I mean, there's a movement. I have this song. There's a movement building, shifting pictures in the frame. And there's a huge shifting that's happening, and people are starting to acknowledge and talk about sexual abuse. People are starting to understand the depth of the trauma that is caused. This is all about trauma. And sexual abuse is stored in the thoughts and the emotions, the cells, the body memory. It's there. It's so important that when you're comfortable to start talking about it, that you talk about it and you don't change your tone. All of a sudden you have to whisper because you're in the hallway and somebody might hear. No. We need to talk about this because people feel they did something bad. And, you know, shame itself is, I am bad. I'm a bad, awful person.
Yes.
Guilt is when I did something that was bad. And we have to talk so the people realize that their shame is not their shame. It's somebody else's shame.
Amazing.
Yeah.
As Denise mentioned, you wear so many hats. So you are such a go-getter. What are you looking forward to taking on in the future?
Well, you know, I'm going to school, so I can get some letters behind. I think I have a heck of a lot of knowledge. I call myself a coach now, so if people are looking to somebody who's pretty progressive to talk to. You know, I want to learn more and more and more. I'm somebody who will forever be learning. I mean, I have like 10 books on the go all the time, and I'm listening to information in the car. And like I said, I believe in different methodologies because nobody will heal from the same thing.
We have about 30 seconds left, but before you go, I just wanted to ask you, what was the moment that you reclaimed your voice?
The moment I reclaimed my voice is when I locked that door. And I didn't let him in. That was the beginning of my voice. And it was a few years ago when teaching self-protection, a kid asked me, Miss, have you ever been violated? And I said, yes. And if you have, we need to talk about it openly. That was about 5 or 6 years ago.
So powerful.
Wow. Debbie, you're awesome. I could just sit at your feet and listen to you all day. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show today. Your hard work is really inspiring, and we wish you well as you continue to positively and profoundly affect the lives of other survivors.
Well, thank you so much, ladies, and continue to do what you do, because there are an awful lot of people out there that need to listen to programs like this so they get the courage to step forward and get some help.
Thank you. And to our listeners, you can connect with Deb and find out more about her book, Unlocking the Door, Beyond Sexual Abuse, at debmayberry.com. That's debmayberry.com.
Thank you all so much for tuning in today. Just a reminder again that the next Abuse Survival Stories event will be happening on Saturday, June 20th in Toronto. For more information or to talk to us about the show, send an email to radio@abusesurvivalstories.com. You've been listening to Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice. I'm your host, Reese Zigazaga.
And I'm your co-host, Denise. We're going to close off today with Blue Nile's poem, Hush. If you'd like to contact Blue Nile, you can reach her at vanessa9370@gmail.com. That's VENESSA9370@gmail.com. Please enjoy the poem, and we will see you next week.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. I heard the door close. We will be back. Be a good girl. Parents' kiss still warm on my cheek. I sit in my seat. Maybe this time I will be invisible. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a... Shh! Come sit on my knee. I bought you something pretty. Come on, I know you're not asleep. Come and sit on Granddaddy's knee. Let's play that game you love to play. Float away. Float away. Please, God, let me float away. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Red explosion. Sticky shame. Help me, Mommy. I don't like this game. Invisible. I'm not here. I'm sorry, God. I'm a bad little girl. Prayers fall, left unheard, torn, innocence gone. They say life is short. Mine, so long. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. If that mockingbird don't sing, 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 child, sing. Do you know the joy you will bring? Your family will see you on stage. You have such a pretty voice for your age. Sing, baby, sing. Let God hear your voice. Little girl, never having a choice. I don't like this song. Therapy in the morning, something's wrong. Secret is out, family meeting. Granddaddy's gone. Uncle's hands bleeding. Fall on my knees, am I the reason? Silence, death, lonely, end. Paper, pen, breathe again. Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Don't say a word. Don't say a word.
Thank you again for tuning in to the program this week. Abuse Survival Stories presents I Reclaim My Voice with co-hosts Reese Zigazaga and Denise Watkus can be heard live every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Please join us again next week.